KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You may know my guest, Jenny Slate, from, let's say, the rambunctious sister of John Ralphio on Parks and Rec, or as the determined wife from House of Lies, or perhaps the world's most self-possessed mollusk on the internet. But you should get to know her. Basically, her first starring role in the film Obvious Child, which is opening. Jenny Slate, thanks so much for being here.
Ooh, thank you for having me.
And of course, Obvious Child, directed by Gillian Robespierre, which started as a short. Explain the differences, if you will, between the short and the feature.
Well, the short, we did it in 2009, and Gillian came and saw me do stand-up and then asked me to do it after seeing that. She'd written it, but the feature was written for me by her, so it was much more specific to, I guess, what I find funny, because Gillian and I share a sense of humor. And how, you know, when she wrote the short, Donna was just a lot less specific. And the short was, you know, girl gets dumped, girl gets pregnant.
Donna is a character, somebody who, in some ways, probably thinks of herself as an artist and thinks that her experience is the kind of thing that should be exposed to everybody. But once her vulnerability comes to the fore because of what happens to her in the film, which is she gets pregnant, then suddenly that whole understanding of who she is as this sort of artist who makes her art her life is kind of thrown out the window.
Yeah. I mean, she's not very grand about what she thinks about herself as a performer. I think
But she thinks of herself as a performer.
She thinks of herself
who has
as
license
a performer.
To like use everything.
Yeah, totally. It's sort of relaxed. It's not lazy, but at the beginning I would describe her as somebody who's rather passive. She's not
really.
Well, just in that she's not making the choice to do the stand-up. She's just doing it because it's so easy for her. It's the place where she's the most comfortable. And she's not making a lot of choices. She's just kind of barfing it all out on the stage. That's how I see it, at least. She's probably has a lot of kind of like invisible gears in front of her, and she's not using any of them. She's just pressing the gas. You know, she's just go. She's just got the go button. And I keep forgetting the questions that are asked of me, like, while I'm talking.
Oh, good. Then my job here is done.
I did it the other day, too, when we were talking.
Yeah, I feel like I've been doing
this. Like, it happens all the time.
Well, let me ask you a question that you can probably follow from beginning to end.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things I really like so much about you as a performer is your control of your voice.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of aware of what Donna you can sort of hear when she's really terrified. And I've always wondered, how did you train your voice? I mean, because you're so good with it.
Oh, thank you. I've always been able to do different voices and recognized it, I guess, as maybe like a talent when I went to camp and there were skits and stuff. And I'm also, I think, fairly competitive by nature. So the second I realized that it was like something that I could do, especially since I was a really small kid, very bad at sports, and this was kind of my muscle, I think. But yeah, I don't know. It's not, I don't have a trained voice in any way, but.
But did you like record as a kid or anything like that? Or
I think as a kid, I always wanted to be an actress, and not just because I loved to perform, but I loved actresses. I loved how self-possessed they were. I loved how they were not lost in a crowd. And, you know, sometimes I have these feelings of like, am I big or little? I don't know. Sometimes I feel way too big and too much for people. And sometimes, you know, I feel unnoticed. And I liked that actresses, you know, somebody's always like wondering where they are, like on the set. They have minders and stuff. They have babysitters. And They're not alone.
It's the treatment. My guest who wants to be number one on the call sheet of life is Jenny Slate. Her first film as star is Obvious Child. But as we talk about this, one of the things you've played so many characters who are competitive. I mean, I think about Tammy from Bob's Burgers.
The most competitive.
Who will be heard at all times and has this running commentary on her life. And so a lot of these characters, even thinking about your character on Bored to Death, these characters who tend to talk about their lives as they're living them, this sort of sense of this running narration. You're so busy giving your life a sense of drama, you're not quite sure if you're living it or not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, I'm definitely sure I'm living it. There's a sort of a blurry line between like masturbatory like narration and just awareness and joy of life. And I like to think that I'm on the side of awareness and being really excited just to have a life. And my tastes haven't changed a lot since I was a kid. Like I like the same things and to do the same things and require the same amount of freedom. And I feel really excited now because I have the freedom and I can just do the things that I always wanted to do, like perform and be an actress or be in love or choose my own clothes or drink soda. I'm really into the, you know, little things.
But these characters you play, though, that sense of drama you're talking about, this sort of this thing that actresses bring into a room, a lot of these characters you play have a self-imposed sense of drama. They make entrances.
Yeah, but it definitely comes from feeling like, you know, if they don't, somebody might not acknowledge them at all. You know, like it's so pushy. Tammy on Bob's Burgers, she's just so pushy because she's, you know, she's grabby. She's desperate. I don't know if you saw her bat mitzvah episode, but I mean, you know, it's like...
That's a pretty great episode.
Yeah, and I do think that, you know, I'm the middle of two girls, and that sort of, look at me, like, please look at me, I'm lonely, or I'm like, I need to be looked at, instinct doesn't work very well for a family, you know, of five. Everybody needs to be looked at, and my parents are also both creative people and they need to be looked at. And I learned to somehow use that in a way where I don't, you know, it doesn't like burn me all the time.
Because I'm just saying this back to Donna, that sort of sense of she's incredibly presentational when we meet her and she owns rooms that she walks into and she's heard to just wanting to like disappear from the face of the earth and hoping she curls up into this ball, these problems will all go away. How'd you come with that way of playing the character? Because, again, that's very different from the short, just because we spend more time with her.
Yeah. It's sort of like her energy gets sucked out. You know, she's so tired, and the things weigh on her so heavily that it's almost like she's just like, all right, just get on top. Just everything lie on top of me, if that's what this is, fine. And I'll just make little statements from underneath all of this crap. And I like that heaviness because it shows that even, you know, it shows through even during the times when she's like, this is horrible. I have nothing. I have nobody. Levity pokes through, you know, little sprouts start to come up even though she isn't sure that they would and isn't controlling them. And I don't feel heavy in life. I feel light and bubbly. And I tried to shut that off as much as I could.
It's an interesting thing because it's a real performance. And my guess is the first time you've had a chance to shape a performance like this from beginning to end in a feature like that.
Yeah.
And it must have been an incredibly exciting idea for you to get to do that.
So great. And there's a lot of, you know, people might say, well, she's very close to you. Donna's very close to you. Because I also have a sort of a sense of humor as a reflex sometimes. But I don't think of Donna as a shy person. And I think of myself as more gentle and shy than Donna. And also Donna's really, really sarcastic to me. But I truly miss sarcasm a lot of the time. And like dry humor often just slaps me in the face as like meanness and I don't get it. And then my husband has to be like, no, they weren't being mean. That was a joke. And then my comment will be like, well, what is the function of a joke if it like puts its foot on your head?
Do you say this and think about how the movie starts where Donna's just that slice of life, observational humor, it's just all elbows.
Yeah, she's like a baby knocking down blocks. She doesn't get it. And I've had that experience before as well where like, you know, I've been out to dinner with my husband and I start telling a story about something like that I think is adorable or silly that he did. And, you know, afterwards he'll be like, this is not your, you didn't ask to tell that story. And like, you used me to perform. And then my response will kind of be like, but I was nervous and I wanted the people to feel comfortable and I wanted them to have a good time. And it's taken me a while to realize, like, you have to have a little more faith in people, and you certainly can't sacrifice other people's personal experiences that may or may not be private. Or, you know, just because, like, a lot of stuff isn't private to me doesn't mean that those other people have the same compartments for their stuff. You know, like, everything is out for me.
But even though, I mean, you're telling this that you do this inadvertently, but you have a sense of propriety, obviously. And when your husband tells you about this, you understand that you've crossed the line maybe, or you've done something offensive. And Donna isn't like that.
No, she isn't. When her boyfriend is breaking up with her, you know, he says, it's really weird for me when you do that. And her response is, are you still mad at me about last night? She truly doesn't get it. And she's not like she's not an a-hole. She's just a bit reckless and a bit unformed.
But see, even in that scene when they're breaking up, she starts to turn his sort of sneaking around on her into a bit almost.
Yeah.
I mean, even that's her reflex.
Yeah. You know, the humor can also be, she can have a sharp tongue. And not a sharp tongue, like, sometimes when I say the phrase sharp tongue, I think of, like, Joan Crawford or, like, a Faye Dunaway character. You know, just, like, people whose tongues are just, like, swords and they just, like, cut penises off. You know, like, they're just, like, unyield. They just, like, don't care. But that's not what it is at all. It's, like, she's using it to highlight how incredibly stupid she thinks he's being. And it is a weapon. And
but it's a reflex even. I mean,
it's
she can't help but do it. You know, it's like you hit her in the knee or some kind of remark will come out. You know, that's how she leads her life.
Yeah. Yeah, she does. And you also see that the second she's a smartass with him, that he uses that to storm away from her. So you get the shape of what her life is like. She's putting stuff out. She's not exactly controlling it. And the person who is her partner at the start, who dumps her, is somebody who basically uses it all against her.
There's a thing that often happens, and we talked about this on stage, and when somebody's doing stand-up in a movie, is usually you just cut to the last line, the audience is laughing.
Right.
And you don't get that sense of this person on stage fighting to get control of the audience and making that kind of, making their presence known.
It's hard to do stand-up in movies. It's hard for me to watch it. And a lot of times it's because I don't understand the editing. You know, usually it's just giant joke, giant laugh, giant joke, giant laugh. And
oh, what's supposed to be a joke? It may not even be funny, but it's sort of set up to be a joke in the movie.
Right. I think, you know, sometimes things really are just statements in Donna's stand-up. And they're not supposed to be giant laughs. And she's way more interested in the conversation and in somehow mimicking a real conversation that you might have over dinner. That's what's satisfying to her. And that's what's satisfying to me as a stand-up as well. But, I mean, I'm also older than Donna. So I know, looking back on it now, what she's doing.
We'll have to take a break. My guest was giving way too much away about herself. It's Jenny Slate. She's starring in Obvious Child. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Ever wish you could hear KCRW's signature music programming wherever and whenever you want? You can with Eclectic 24. Our ever-expanding all-music stream is available worldwide 24/7 online. You can listen to KCRW's diverse music mix on the go or in the car through your iPhone or Android phone app. KCRW's Eclectic 24, where and when you want it. Check it out. Go to kcrw.com/eclectic24.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm sitting with The Obvious Child. See, I just turned the title into
a... There, you did it.
No, I didn't. I didn't do anything like that, apparently. I just been straightened out.
What have
my
you
guest,
done?
My guest is the star of Obvious Child, Jenny Slate.
Ooh la la.
Ooh la la, indeed. so much of what you do in playing character roles is you have to come in and make an impact.
Yeah.
And you've done that so often. And what's so fascinating about some of these characters that you played is, and even seeing you on stage, is it's about the way these people deal with boredom.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're determined to not be bored.
Yeah.
And determined to not bore people around them.
Right.
How far back does that go for you? Do you see this pattern in a lot of these people that you played?
Yeah. I hate being bored. Maybe that is in everything, because I think, you know, like being bored in synagogue growing up would make me like nauseous, or, you know, and now I will say, I know I'm on, you know, I'm on NPR, but as a kid, the opening to All Things Considered used to make me feel so scared about how bored I was going to be that I would throw up in the car. And now I listen to it every day and it comes on and I'm like, bah, 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 bah. I like love it. I pour my wine. I'm just listening to all of the news, but it goes back.
I've never been as self-conscious about talking to a microphone in my life as I have been after your NPR rant there. But this is the point where I have to go public radio on you and tell the audience a little bit what the movie's about.
Please.
Go ahead. What's the movie about?
Oh, I thought you were going to do it.
No. Well, I'm afraid to hear myself talk anymore after all
I
this.
I like the voices. It was the music that made me upset. The horns. Obvious Child is a romantic comedy about a young woman named Donna Stern, who is a comedian living in Brooklyn, who gets dumped at the very start of the movie and then fired from a job that she likes, but the store is closing, so there's that. And then she gets drunk and pregnant from a wild and fun one-night stand.
But what, again, I find so fascinating about this, and just looking at all these people that you played, and I love that you mentioned Joan Crawford and Faye Dunaway, because clearly you love making entrances.
I guess I do.
You really do as an
actress. I do love costuming myself. You know, like I love getting dressed and I love clothes. I do. And I was telling my dad recently, I was reading, there's a book that just came out about Sylvia Plath and the summer that she spent at Mademoiselle being a guest editor. And I did always think of her as this just like relentlessly morose lady with just like a big braid on her head, living in a really cloudy place, you know.
Wearing a black cashmere sweatshirt, yes.
Yeah, you know, and no.
She wasn't that girl.
Not at all. And the description of her as a young woman and how much she cared about her clothes and of her sort of never separating that vanity and self-care and being, quote-unquote, perfectly turned out and also being a deeply creative person, those were one. And I've always wondered if being concerned with my particular appearance, my personal style, and also wanting to be an original creative person, if those bump heads, but I don't think they do, but I was telling my dad, I was like, oh no, I'm reading this and I feel like I'm exactly like Sylvia Plath, except I'm bad at poetry.
But as you say that, though, I mean, that sense of style,
yeah,
that's a movie thing. That's a sort of thing that's a thing of comportment. And I'm hard-pressed, I think, for another comedian who understands that sense of vanity and how vanity – and these characters are often so brash. It's like they're announcing that they're insecure.
Yeah,
but what are you going to do about it?
But, you know, I grew up watching a lot of videos. We didn't have cable, but, like, my parents rented a lot of videos.
Was that
from
a
the
choice
library.
Your parents had to
yeah,
not have cable
it bummed
in the
me
house?
Out so much. I just wanted to watch Nickelodeon and eat Doritos, and instead it was like – well, we have basmati rice, and the GBH auction is on again, and one of your mother's pots is being auctioned off. So we're going to watch this for the next 7 hours so that we can see your mom's pot being auctioned off, which actually I liked. But, you know, I remember watching All of Me, Lily Tomlin, or Brigadoon, and just seeing these women so dressed up and doing such unique performances, and I wanted to be them and I wanted to be their characters all at once. And also, you know, my grandmothers were really concerned with, you know, one of my grandmothers is, English is not her first language, and she always says, I'm going to make my toilet. Just like her, like, a toilet. Like she's, what she means, you know, just like spray all of her stuff on and do her powders and spray something on her scarf so that it smells good. And I love those little things of self-care. They're so private, and even though they end up being public, I think they're ceremonies and they're old-fashioned, and they're romantic and their manners. You know, they're part of having nice manners.
And your understanding of these characters in terms of their personal style, both in the way that they act and in the way they dress, is really interesting that you have this kind of understanding of these people like that. That's why I said when Donna, we can see that.
She really, I mean, we made a lot of choices with Donna, and a lot of it is Gillian's genius and Liz, our producer. I don't know that I would have had the confidence enough to say, like, yeah, put me in these huge, weird, vintage cardigans and, you know, no makeup and all of that. I wouldn't want to wear any of that stuff in life.
You don't want the dumpy boyfriend sweater that you see everybody in that part of the world wearing?
Everybody wears it. I don't dress that way, but we made a choice to just try to be natural about the different states that Donna goes through. And Gillian says that one of the things that made her feel relieved, I think she told me, was that when we were on the phone and I was like, well, when Donna's in her house, no bras. You know, like, people don't walk around their houses for the most part. The women that I know in, like, I mean, unless they got, like, crazy, you know, heavy bags, they got to get them into a bra. But, like, for the most part, ladies, relax. I mean, Donna doesn't wear a bra at home. There's no reason for it. She doesn't want to. And so she never did.
But that's the thing, interesting thing to say, because, you know, Edith Head once said that underwear is invented for the movies because people don't wear underwear like that in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. In our movie, we made an effort to have, like, nude bras that weren't, like, you won't see any fancy, like, lingerie sets like that. You know, everything was normal underpants. And I think that's important in general to show women in normal underpants. Ladies do not walk around with, like, lingerie under their stuff anymore.
I just like that, and I find this to be such a specific and fascinating thing for you, that the idea of the way people go through the world and the attack they make on the world is a way to sort of play characters. I mean, it goes to the stuff you and Gabe do on stage. And is it just because you were exposed to those movies, you got a chance to see these really kind of big archetypal performances, and was that part of it for you?
I think so. Yeah, I was really, really influenced by what I watched as a kid. I also watched, like, The Three Stooges a lot with my dad on Saturdays. But, yeah, I mean, I watched Carol Burnett and Madeline Kahn and...
Well, Madeline Kahn.
You know, what a woman. To me, she is, like, the ultimate. She and Ruth Gordon, they're women with, like, very distinct sexualities and a femaleness that is not prototypical, but that, to me, I identified with and couldn't wait to be. I couldn't wait to be a woman. And there is a line in Obvious Child where Donna says, you know, she's just really excited to grow up and, like, have a bra and a schedule. And that is a line that's loaned from my stand-up. Most of the stand-up in the movie is new. But there are, like, a couple things that I just felt like, I got to put this in. Because if we're going to intersect, it's fine. But, yeah, I think those things really affected me. And I just watched these people, I wouldn't say assaulting the world with their characters, but really flavoring it and changing it for everybody who encountered them.
And these women you just mentioned, I mean, Madeline Kahn especially, but Ruth Gordon, too, who's also a writer in addition to being an actress.
Yeah.
This made these entrances. As soon as they walked into a room, you knew who they were.
Yeah, people.
They arrived.
Yeah.
And that sense of arrival is key to almost everything I've seen you do.
Oh, I'm glad. I've honestly never thought of it that way, but I think about that in life a lot. Which doesn't mean, I get a bit of, like, social anxiety before I go to parties. I feel like...
Do you really?
Yeah, a little bit.
Why? Where does that anxiety come from?
I really don't know. I guess middle school. Like, it's so cliche, but I guess just, like, middle school and, you know, like, being rejected and being, you know, out rather than in. That really bothered me a lot. And I was just thinking the other day, my parents were like, let's just switch schools. This is so bad for you. Why don't you just go to another school? And I remember thinking, no, because if I go to the other school, the people from my school will know that I left because I was a dork or, you know, I was like whatever. And somehow they'll find out at the new school. And then it'll be even more embarrassing because I will have tried to start again and then they'll slam me down. And to me, that's like so psychotic There wasn't even the internet then. So it's not like somebody would post on Facebook like dork incoming or whatever. And also it sounds like I feel bad for myself and I really don't. Like I think that's really weird and I wish that my parents had just been like, no, you're not a martyr. You're not going to the school anymore. You don't have to like do that every day. But I always had a sense, I think, that people were watching and I liked it. I don't know what stage of like the Eric Erickson stuff that puts me in. I think the toddler. It all like rises and sets around my butt or whatever he said.
Yes, again, I put about a sense of style. But you say this, you reminded me of something I said to you when I met you, when you came to the museum with Kroll.
With Kroll, yeah.
And playing Denise from the second season.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps one of my favorite line readings in the history of comedy is her, what the heck?
What the heck?
The voice and the pause and that's such a fully formed character.
Yeah.
But again, still in that passive aggressive, shy way, making an entrance. Everything she says sort of has these sort of cobwebs, so you have to pay attention at these weird pauses.
Because it's all there. I don't want to scrub myself clean. And I'm always interested in characters when they misbehave because of hurt. I think that's something I do, and I hope that I can feel like, well, oh my God, did you just see what that person did? How come they're allowed to do that, and I'm not even allowed to like do anything? And it's and then I just get punished, and I'm some sort of like pariah. And then my friends or my husband will be like, nobody thinks of you that way. Like, you're not in trouble, and nobody can get you in trouble. But I feel like, yeah, there's a lot of acting out done and a lot of posturing that comes from being hurt or being doubtful of other people. And as I, like, get older and I become more relaxed, I don't feel that way anymore, you know, less and less. But I remember the feelings that I've had in life. And even when they become dormant, they're, like, still with me.
But it's so fascinating because so many of these characters you played have been the kind of women who are likely walk into a room and turn over a table.
Yeah.
Just to turn over a table.
Yeah.
And that sense of sort of enforced chaos obviously didn't exist in your house at all. I mean, this is the kind of chaos that just came being in the family.
Yeah.
There wasn't people just stirring up trouble, just to stir up trouble to be seen.
No. In fact, you know, that was not going to fly with my parents. They would never ground me. My sisters didn't really get in trouble very much, but they wouldn't ground me, but they would just be like, ugh, that's such a drag, Jen. That's such a drag. And then you would be like embarrassed. It was like a really adult feeling. Like, it wasn't like the girls are not allowed to watch TV. It was if my mom caught us watching the TV, like, because we could still watch 90210 because we got Fox 25. And, she wouldn't be like, turn that off. She'd come in and be like, oh, I guess if you want to watch that drivel instead of actually finding something out, enjoy yourself, and then sit there and talk over the program, you know, like, so it wasn't going to happen. It was always an effort to try to make us into people.
But it's funny because these characters you play, though, so many of them, to some extent, even Donna, are people who consume. They're taking things in all the time.
They do take a lot. A lot of my characters are big grabbers. I mean, I find that really funny. I find it to be really funny. I do, when people are just, when they take without thinking. I think if that's done in the right way, it's really, really funny. And I, in general, enjoy characters that are confident and oblivious, like Ace Ventura.
Okay, well, Obvious Child is not Ace Ventura, but it's funny anyway.
Yeah.
And we're out of time, Jenny. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Elvis. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Yes, I'll try to use my best non-public radio voice. My guest is Jenny Slate. She's starring in the film Obvious Child. It's opening around the country. A recording engineer who also mixes the show is Melissa Morton. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm not Jenny. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.